Chapter 3. It inwardly. Speak to me. Oh, speak to me, cries Tom's young lady to the gifted. I don't want to speak to anybody, he says, finding his voice at last, and trying to push her away. I think I had better go. I'm frightened, he says, looking about as if he had lost something. Not one look of love, she cries. Hear me while I declare I don't know how to look a look of love, he says, all in a maze. Don't declare anything. I don't want to hear anybody. That's right, cries the old gentleman who it seems had been listening. That's right. Don't hear her. Emma shall marry you tomorrow, my friend, whether she likes it or not, and she shall marry Mr. Grigg. Gentlemen, these words were no sooner out of his mouth than Galileo Isaac Newton Flamsteed, who it seems, had been listening to, darts in, and spinning round and round, like a young giant's top, cries, let her, let her. I'm fierce, I'm furious. I give her leave. I'll never marry anybody after this, never. It isn't safe. She is the falsest of the false, he cries, tearing his hair and gnashing his teeth. And I live and die a bachelor. The little boy, observed the gifted gravely, albeit of tender years, has spoken wisdom. I have been led to the contemplation of womankind, and will not adventure on the troubled waters of matrimony. What? Says the old gentleman, not marry my daughter. Won't you, Mooney? Not if I make her? Won't you? Won't you? No, says Mooney, I won't. And if anybody asks me any more, I'll run away, and never come back again. Mr. Grigg, says the old gentleman, the stars must be obeyed. You have not changed your mind, because of a little girlish folly, eh, Mr. Grigg? Tom, gentlemen, had his eyes about him, and was pretty sure that all this was a device and trick of the waiting maid, to put him off his inclination. He had seen her hiding and skipping about the two doors, and had observed that a very little whispering from her pacified the salamander directly. So, thinks Tom, this is a plot, but it won't fit. Eh, Mr. Grigg? Says the old gentleman. Why, sir, says Tom, pointing to the crucible, if the soup's nearly ready, another hour beholds the consummation of our labors, returned the old gentleman. Very good, says Tom, with a mournful air. It's only for 2 months, but I may as well be the richest man in the world even for that time. I'm not particular, I'll take her, sir. I'll take her. The old gentleman was in a rapture, to find Tom still in the same mind, and drawing the young lady towards him by little and little, was joining their hands by main force, when all of a sudden, gentlemen, the crucible blows up, with a great crash, everybody screams, the room is filled with smoke, and Tom, not knowing what may happen next, throws himself into a fancy attitude, and says, come on, if you're a man, without addressing himself to anybody in particular. The labors of 15 years, says the old gentleman, clasping his hands and looking down upon the gifted, who was saving the pieces, are destroyed in an instant. And I am told, gentlemen, by the by, that this same philosopher's stone would have been discovered 100 times at least, to speak within bounds, if it wasn't for the one unfortunate circumstance, that the apparatus always blows up, when it's on the very point of succeeding. Tom turns pale when he hears the old gentleman expressing himself to this unpleasant effect, and stammers out that, if it's quite agreeable to all parties, he would like to know exactly what has happened, and what change has really taken place in the prospects of that company. We have failed for the present, Mr. Grigg, says the old gentleman, wiping his forehead. And I regret it the more, because I have in fact invested my niece's £5,000 in this glorious speculation. But don't be cast down, he says, anxiously, in another 15 years, Mr. Grigg, oh! Cries Tom, letting the young lady's hand fall. Were the stars very positive about this union, sir? They were, says the old gentleman. I'm sorry to hear it, Tom makes answer, for it's no go, sir. No what? Cries the old gentleman. Go, sir, says Tom, fiercely. I forbid the banns. And with these words, which are the very words he used, he sat himself down in a chair, and, laying his head upon the table, thought with a secret grief of what was to come to pass on that day 2 months. Tom always said, gentlemen, that waiting maid was the artfulest minx he had ever seen, and he left it in writing in this country, when he went to colonize abroad, that he was certain in his own mind she and the salamander had blown up the philosopher's stone on purpose, and to cut him out of his property. I believe Tom was in the right, gentlemen. But whether or no, she comes forward at this point, and says, may I speak, sir? And the old gentleman answering, yes, you may, she goes on to say, that the stars are no doubt quite right in every respect, but Tom is not the man. And she says, don't you remember, sir, that when the clock struck 5 this afternoon, you gave Master Galileo a rap on the head with your telescope, and told him to get out of the way? Yes, I do, says the old gentleman. Then, says the waiting maid, I say he's the man, and the prophecy is fulfilled. The old gentleman staggers at this, as if somebody had hit him a blow on the chest, and cries, he, why he's a boy. Upon that, gentlemen, the salamander cries out that he'll be 21 next Lady Day, and complains that his father has always been so busy with the sun round which the earth revolves, that he has never taken any notice of the sun that revolves round him, and that he hasn't had a new suit of clothes since he was 14, and that he wasn't even taken out of nankeen frocks and trousers till he was quite unpleasant in them, and touches on a good many more family matters to the same purpose. To make short of a long story, gentlemen, they all talk together, and cry together, and remind the old gentleman that as to the noble family, his own grandfather would have been Lord Mayor if he hadn't died at a dinner the year before, and they show him by all kinds of arguments that if the cousins are married, the prediction comes true every way. At last, the old gentleman, being quite convinced, gives in, and joins their hands, and leaves his daughter to marry anybody she likes, and they are all well pleased, and the gifted as well as any of them. In the middle of this little family party, gentlemen, sits Tom all the while, as miserable as you like. But, when everything else is arranged, the old gentleman's daughter says that their strange conduct was a little device of the waiting maid's, to discuss the lovers he had chosen for him, and will he forgive her? And if he will, perhaps he might even find her a husband, and when she says that, she looks uncommon hard at Tom. Then the waiting maid says that, oh dear, she couldn't abear Mr. Grigg should think she wanted him to marry her, and that she had even gone so far as to refuse the last lamplighter, who was now a literary character having set up as a bill sticker, and that she hoped Mr. Grigg would not suppose she was on her last legs by any means, for the baker was very strong in his attentions at that moment, and as to the butcher, he was frantic. And I don't know how much more she might have said, gentlemen, for, as you know, this kind of young women are rare ones to talk, if the old gentleman hadn't cut in suddenly, and asked Tom if he'd have her, with £10 to recompense him for his loss of time and disappointment, and as a kind of bribe, to keep the story secret. It don't much matter, sir, says Tom, I ain't long for this world. 8 weeks of marriage, especially with this young woman, might reconcile me to my fate. I think, he says, I could go off easy after that. With which he embraces her with a very dismal face, and groans in a way that might move a heart of stone, even a philosopher's stone. Egad, says the old gentleman, that reminds me this bustle put it out of my head there was a figure wrong. He'll live to a green old age 87 at least. How much, sir? Cries Tom. 87, says the old gentleman. Without another word, Tom flings himself on the old gentleman's neck, throws up his hat, cuts a caper, defies the waiting maid, and refers her to the butcher. You won't marry her, says the old gentleman, angrily. And live after it, says Tom. I'd sooner marry a mermaid with a small tooth comb and looking glass. Then take the consequences, says the other. With those words I beg your kind attention here, gentlemen, for it's worth your notice. The old gentleman wetted the forefinger of his right hand in some of the liquor from the crucible that was spilt on the floor, and drew a small triangle on Tom's forehead. The room swam before his eyes, and he found himself in the watch house. Apostrophe, found himself where? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the vice, on behalf of the company generally. In the watch house, apostrophe, said the chairman. It was late at night, and he found himself in the very watch house from which he had been let out that morning. Apostrophe, did he go home? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the vice. The watch house people rather objected to that, apostrophe, said the chairman. So he stopped there that night, and went before the magistrate in the morning. Why, you're here again, are you? Says the magistrate, adding insult to injury. We'll trouble you for 5 shillings more, if you can conveniently spare the money. Tom told him he had been enchanted, but it was of no use. He told the contractors the same, but they wouldn't believe him. It was very hard upon him, gentlemen, as he often said, for was it likely he'd go and invent such a tale? They shook their heads, and told him he'd say anything but his prayers, as indeed he would. There's no doubt about that. It was the only imputation on his moral character that ever I heard of. Apostrophe. End of Project Gutenberg's A Text of the Lamplighter, by Charles Dickens. LMPLT by Gutenberg Edition.